Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going quite well. I'm freezing on the way here. I'm going to freeze on my way home.
We have, just when you come into our front door, behind the front door, it hides it, is a sliding door. When you slide that door open, it's one of those pocket doors.
Yeah.
There's a bathroom. With that door closed, you walk into that bathroom,
yeah,
and it is so toasty warm.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I was wondering, where's you going with this? Because there's a vent in there. It's always, every time I've used that bathroom, it's always hot.
You're walking through, just come in from outside, you go in that bathroom.
Yeah. I'm just going to sit here for a while.
I'm just going to sit in the toilet for an hour and warm up.
That's true. It's always yeah. warm in there.
Yeah.
It gets a direct vent right from the furnace. It's the first stop for the air.
Yep. It's our singing bathroom. Any little kid, and we've proven this multiple times, if you tell a little kid, go in there to use that bathroom as opposed to our other one, you will just sit there quietly and you'll hear singing.
Oh.
There's something about that
echo.
Bathroom.
It's got an echo.
That kids sing in it.
Who knew that toilets were going to be the main topic tonight? Singing in the toilet.
So, do you prefer the ones with the button or the... After this commercial, we'll be talking bidets. Or bidets.
I do need to do something with my toilet at home. I have to. Currently, it's isolated because...
you broke it.
No, it leaks. And so, it'll wake me up like... half a dozen times during the night, I'll suddenly hear, I'm a light sleeper.
Like it's running?
Yeah, it's like, whoa, it's filling.
No, there's that little flapper valve thingy.
Oh, I know.
You got to take the whole thing out?
I've taken the whole thing into Home Depot, and they go, oh, we don't have parts for that one.
Oh, you clean it?
Yeah.
Put some Vaseline around it?
That's what I was going to do.
Put
I was going to use
in.
Vaseline.
Ours is doing the same thing.
I don't
thing.
Have silicone grease, so I was going to use Vaseline.
No, we just use Vaseline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we used to use the same thing in our fishing rod reels.
Yeah?
Yeah, to... lube stuff up.
Okay.
Just, yeah, keeps the water
there
out.
There you go. I was thinking of Vaseline.
Now you know.
I would prefer to use silicone because I worry about Vaseline getting hardened and sticky.
Beggars can't be choosers, buddy.
I know.
You got a whole thing of KY jelly there? Then throw some of that stuff on. Rip open that toilet. Turn the water off first. Flush it so there's no water in there.
There you go. Yeah, that's what I'll have to do.
Welcome to Fixing Toilets.
I showed Siobhan this morning. I said, okay, because she went to use the bathroom. I said, you can't use that one. What? I said, it's isolated. It's leaking because I'd already cleaned it and fixed it like 6 months ago and when it was leaking. Now it's leaking again. She goes, I said, this is the valve. You turn it this way. She goes, I'm not going to know how to do that. It's like, I'm sorry, it's a valve. Oh, she won't use that bathroom now.
See? Never have to clean that bathroom.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway, so it's cold out.
Yes, it's cold out.
That's where I was going with the whole warm thing.
You segued into bathrooms.
See? What a segue guy I am. Yes. I can segue into anything.
Yes. And actually this time we actually thought ahead because we were like, hey, we're going to talk about that. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. I think it's this. Yeah. Google it first.
Just to make sure.
Because we're always idiots. We always say, oh, I think it's this and it's not. Anyways, polar vortex.
Polar vortex.
So anybody who is looking for a midwinter canoe kayak trip into the southern states, they want to, maybe they're going to the to Texas or Louisiana. It's like, I'm sorry about your vacation if you're going this week because
we've made it feel like home.
You guys are stealing our cold air. But yeah, so what is it?
Rains
I pulled
and
it up on. I went to Weather Network and I pulled up wind and cold and snowfall and so on. It's reached right down into the Gulf of Mexico and
yeah?
So Louisiana, New Orleans, like across Tallahassee, Florida, like it's cold and snowy and there's snow on the ground in Florida. Like, whoever thought they'd have snow on the ground in New Orleans? Whoever thought it'd snow in New Orleans? Yeah. Like, holy
I remember
cow.
One year when I was a kid. Maybe I wasn't even a kid. The big news, and everybody up here was talking about it. Oh, oranges. Oranges are going to be so expensive because of massive frost.
They had a big frost that year. Yeah. I remember that as a kid. There was a big frost and a big die-off in the orange groves in Florida.
Yeah. So oranges were going to be so expensive. And
I don't think we ever noticed it.
Yeah.
It never really amounted
to it. I don't know. I didn't pay the bills at that point. That's true, yeah. I didn't notice it at all.
I was a kid at the time as well. I was like...
But for some reason, we were eating a lot of bananas and apples.
Exactly.
Nary a citrus product to be seen.
Yes.
We all had scurvy that year. I remember the big scurvy outbreak of 1983.
Yeah, 83 scurvy outbreak.
Yeah. I don't remember what year it was. I just remember that was a big thing. Just all of a sudden, there was all the adults seemed to be talking about the weather for a change in Florida. What does that have to do with?
Well, I think in the long run, so we're getting kind of puffy and fluffy talking about vacations, but like seriously, the people who live down in those areas, you're not insulated for cold. You're not prepared for cold. And so you start getting a couple pipes freezing and bursting, and like they are in the...
What's their snowplow budget for the year, do you think?
Well, they wouldn't have
$8
one.
$8?
They wouldn't have...
We got Phil happens to have a secondhand plow for his truck.
They would have graders for leveling and construction and stuff, so they could use stuff like that. But like you'd be worried about people's homes being damaged because of pipes freezing.
Old people not being able to get out.
It's not too terribly cold. It's like, for Canadians, so it's a minus...
I put a hoodie on today.
I say Canadians because I'm going Celsius. So it's minus... So I saw that in New Orleans, it was -3. South of New Orleans, they had some freezing rain and sleet. But I don't know that they will reach a point where they might be freezing pipes, maybe. Hopefully not. But, it's not something that you'd be prefer. They're saying that this is they call it a once-in-a-lifetime weather event. So.
Interesting.
Yes, I know, right? Very interesting. Speaking of lifetimes, I was... just popped into my head. So, it was a different way of counting time. They say it was the matriarchal count of time. And so, on average, women have babies at about 25 years old. It's all over the place, but on average. So, they were saying that, the Civil War was like 20 mothers ago. And so, it's like, if you think about that, it's like, it's really time. You think of time in a grand scale. But
yeah, but you can't measure all mothers the same. Some mothers are bigger than other mothers. So they last longer.
This is true. Right? But we're talking lifespans. It's like, 20 mothers ago, we're in the middle of the Civil War.
Yeah, but a mother back then didn't live as long as a mother now.
True.
So is one of, when an 1800s mother... Is a 2020-something mother worth 3 1800 mothers? You can't compare that.
No, you can't.
That's like 5 hands high. Well, if my hand's bigger than yours.
Exactly.
Whose hands are we going by here? Mine? Or the baby that lady just had? Because that's a small horse if it's his.
My thought process has just gone so far left field. I can't even talk about the stuff that I'm thinking about right now. Remind me when we're done recording.
I mean, we could talk a whole hour on this sort of stuff and just do two podcasts this week. One has absolutely nothing to do with paddling at all.
That paddle looks really big. You have small hands. Anyway.
Oh, man. Yeah. It was said -15 Celsius here.
It's going to be minus.
But it felt like -24.
Yeah. And
it was breezy.
Yeah. So midweek.
It was a bit bitter.
-35 or so. I was looking up Northern Ontario and stuff. And so you go on the temperature map, and it doesn't matter where you click, it'll pull up a temperature on Weather Network. And so, like early in the week, it was there was a lot of -30s and -31s and -32s. If you like in mid Quebec and Moosonee Moose Factory, middle to northern Ontario, Sudbury, but down here closer to the Great Lakes, really temper the temperature.
It tempers it.
Tempers the temperature. So it does hold the temperature up a bit just when the air flows across the lakes, picks up the moisture and kind of warms up the air. But yeah, so further away from the lake, it's cold. It's pretty cold. And I say that knowing that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was routine to have minus 30 degrees temperatures. Mm-hmm. You going to, you know, doing whatever you're doing. Back in New Brunswick when I grew up, it was like regularly minus 20, minus 30 degrees.
But
we don't get those temperatures anymore.
You need
anymore.
To go live a couple years out on the prairies, my friend.
Yes. I know. Minus 40, minus 52 with a wind chill. Say, what?
Is that a snowman out there or is that just somebody frozen?
Is that the mailman? Boy, he's taking a long time to deliver the mail. He's been out there.
He's been holding that same letter for an hour and a half, trying to put it in that mail slot.
Yeah, it's weird how you get used to certain temperatures. Like today, I left work and I'm thinking, woo, it's cold. I was all bundled up. Get to the car and the dash, it says minus 9. It's like, oh, I thought it was a lot colder than that.
Yeah. Well, the wind,
I'm just not used to it. There was no wind. I had no wind when I walked to the car.
Yeah.
So it was it's like, oh, I am not acclimated to cold temperatures. Minus 9, minus 10 degrees feels horrible. Wait till tomorrow morning. With the wind chill, it's going to be minus 35.
Anywhere from 0 to about minus 5. It's just hoodie and a light jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it seems minus 5 to minus 10. I was like, ooh, well, this is getting a bit chilly. Yeah. And then after that, I better put the heavy jacket on.
I spent a few years in Halifax and Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. And it just, it didn't seem to matter what the negative temperature was. It just felt horribly cold because you're right on the water. Mm-hmm. And you're surrounded by the Bay of Fundy and the ocean and stuff like that. It's like, there'd be crystals in the air. So the fog would roll in, but the fog would be crystallized water.
Mm-hmm.
And so it always felt cold just because it was a wet cold.
Yeah. Out west, you get the dry.
Dry cold, yeah.
Which isn't as bad.
Exactly. It doesn't get into your bones.
Getting into the bones. Makes you feel old.
But yeah, I can imagine being, you know, planning a trip or being on the water.
Yeah, no thanks. speaking about being on the water, I'm going to talk about Hookah Falls. Champion kayakers. So might as well talk about a few paddling events here. Champion kayakers are going over Taupo's Hookah Falls and have prompted warnings from officials who say the practice is extremely dangerous. Well, anyway, it's going over the waterfalls in a kayak is, you know, it's dangerous. A sports photographer who says onlookers could underestimate the skill required and have asked him where to rent kayaks to attempt to do it themselves.
I want to try that. Where do I get?
I'm watching all these people going over here. I'm sure I could do that.
That's doable.
athletes involved say they have the skills to handle the challenge, and Hookah Falls is the ultimate playground for whitewater kayakers. Visitors to the attraction are able to watch as the professional kayakers paddled the whitewater over the falls. Extreme freestyle kayaking world champion Zach Mutton said going over Hookah Falls was always a pretty fun ride. And that's high praise from the athlete who's kayaked over falls in Norway, Iceland, and plans to tackle some 30-meter waterfalls in the United States Pacific Northwest this coming month. He says paddling over Hookah at an 11-meter waterfall. 11 meters, that's not.
33 feet.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about people that have been doing these 110.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if we talked about Hookah Falls before, but we've talked about some pretty high falls.
Yeah. It's unique for a couple reasons. Normally we're out in the wilderness, far away from people. It's pretty unique having sometimes a couple hundred people watching. The closer you get to a grand arena or stadium, which is true because these guys that are doing this, they don't have a big crowd.
No.
Cheering them on sort of deal, right? Usually. He says Hookah also has quality whitewater and clean features, making it an attractive challenge for athletes. It has a cool waterfall lip for doing freestyle tricks. It's fun honing in on a trick idea, and it's rewarding when you stick that trick and you have a crowd cheering you on. Like I say, it definitely adds to the atmosphere.
It does. When there's people that's there cheering on, it also gives you a little boost of courage, I guess.
Yeah.
To if you know people are watching. But with these guys, like, they have the experience and the training. Not that, you know, it's not going to, if somebody has a boo-boo, it's not going to be very dangerous to go in and rescue them. But, and I think that's the primary point of the article.
Yeah. Button's fellow champion, kayaker and friend George Snook said the combination of easy access, great whitewater, and crowd support made Hookah Falls the ultimate playground for whitewater kayakers. It's pretty special, so close to home, it's known around the world. And Hookah Falls' shape also gives it an extra boost. This allows you to get a good second of flying through the air before you hit the bottom. When you're doing that with your mates in the sun, it's pretty unbeatable. I definitely feel lucky that I have the skills and able to do it. Okie dokie. They've been in kayaks most of their lives pursuing the sport. To be at a skill level so that you can kayak the hookah, you need training, Snook says. We have safety equipment. We know how to function on the river as a team. These are skills that have been ingrained in us over many, many years of paddling. And we've seen that many times. They all say the same thing.
Yeah.
This isn't just we're going to a river and...
We're not doing it on a lark. We're just not... Hey,
they scouted it. They've got all their safety stuff. They got the guys at the bottom waiting in case something happens.
Yep.
It's not just somebody going, hey, let's just go grab our kayaks and check out that waterfall in there and go.
And for the most part, like me, if I'm not going to do this, that's too much for me.
Yeah.
But for a lot of the trips that I do go on, my first plan is self-rescue. Mm-hmm. I think about self-rescue first. First aid training. I have backcountry first aid training. I took that years ago. And so I'm prepared for some of the worst things that could happen. Not the worst, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So self-rescue is a thing, and that's what they're planning for. They're planning on a self-rescue initially, unless it's really bad.
They have to, right? If things go wrong.
Are you playing fetch with the dog right now?
She dropped the ball on my foot. So then she's standing there staring at me. If something goes wrong, when you go over, the first thing you want to do is, you know, start rescuing yourself if you can.
Yeah.
Right? Till your friends get over there to help. International award-winning outdoor and action sport photographer Rod Hill said people who saw kayakers tackling Hookah Falls could underestimate the difficulty of the task. If it looks easy, you know that it's really hard. They just do it a really good job of it. Hill says kayakers were careful to observe the flow of the water over the falls before attempting to go over. If the flow rate is under 60 cubic meters per second, that's ideal conditions. Usually the water flowed over Hookah Falls at about 270 or 280 is just too much water. He says when he accompanied athletes to Hookah Falls, onlookers have asked him where to rent kayaks, thinking what the athletes were attempting was a touristy activity.
Yeah.
I say to them, don't do it.
Just don't do it.
Lake Taupo Harbor Master Jamie Grant said while kayaking over Hookah Falls was not illegal, it was strongly discouraged due to significant risks.
Which is true. It's but they're thinking from the perspective and aspect. Everybody does stuff that's risky, right?
Like
we've always done that. But the problem here is to mount a rescue and bring in helicopters and rescue crews, you're risking the rescuers' lives. And that's their main concern. It's expensive, and you're risking the lives of the people that come to save you if you do something stupid.
Yeah. The falls present extreme challenges even for experienced kayakers. Rescue operations are near impossible, putting additional lives at risk, and in some cases may be a recovery operation as opposed to a rescue.
Yeah.
Hookah Falls water flow could range from 32 to 270 cubic meters per second, change rapidly and without warning.
Yeah, and that's where I think you, when it comes to with experience, you get to learn the situation where you've been and just your time there. It's I don't know. It's like with changing conditions, you always have to be prepared for it, and that's where your experience has come in to mitigate the risks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're out in the middle of you know, the North Island of New Zealand. It's not like you're downtown somewhere.
Exactly. You're not a block away from the hospital. Yeah.
Tufaritoa Maori Trust Board posted a Facebook recently to address a concerning trend on social media.
That's where the problem comes in.
Recently, numerous posts have circulated showing a video of kayakers navigating the waters of Huka Falls. We must emphasize that this activity is extremely dangerous and we strongly discourage anyone from attempting it. The post said the falls posed serious risks to those who underestimate its power. Turbulent waters can turn treacherous. Kayakers may find themselves in life-threatening situations. When emergencies arise in such environments, they put immense pressure on our dedicated emergency services, land managers, and local businesses who work hard to keep our community safe. The board said safety should be a priority. Beyond all that, I mean, yeah, it's nice. It's cool to go and watch that and see that done and look at the falls and that. There are many beautiful and safer locations to enjoy kayaking adventures without the risks associated with Huka Falls. Please think twice before you embark on such journeys and consider the alternative, safer options for your outdoor activities.
I think a lot of times what people have to consider is how much they don't know. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't know what you don't know, you're going into a situation where there's a, like, it may not be this falls, it could be anything in, with white water. It's, if you don't know how risky it is, you really should educate yourself. You can't just jump into a kayak and say, hang on, there's a set of falls. It's like, no. And some people don't know their limits. And that's where you get yourself into trouble.
Know your limits. Play within it.
There you go.
Yeah, it's if I was going somewhere and I saw that, I don't think the first thing going through my mind would be, "Oh, I got to try that."
No, exactly. I'll enjoy watching somebody else try that.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, it's almost like you got to fake an injury or something just to stop people from doing it. Okay, five runs were good. Your guy number six, you got the short straw. Fake an injury when you get to the bottom. Yeah. We'll fish you out. We'll change your kayak for a different color. You can come back up and do it, and they won't think it's you.
You see, a lot of the time, when I've watched quite a few falls runs with kayaks, and if a good way or easy way to mess up is holding the paddle the wrong way, because when you land, your face is going to touch your knees, and if you have your paddle in front of you, you're going to bust your nose open with the paddle.
Yep.
With
they hold it, or a lot of them just throw it.
They throw it, or they hold it down by their side as if they're going to do a roll. And so then when they fall forward, they're not smashing their face into their paddle handle.
Yeah.
So a lot of people go down, and you can see when they impact, it's like they're just bent right in half. It's like, whoa.
And you see the ones that didn't do it right with the paddle because they come out with the
broken nose
and blood down their face. Right? Yeah.
It's like, oops.
But you watch some of these guys like Nuria Newman and Dane Jackson, all these guys going over these massive waterfalls, and you're just like, cool to watch.
I would never want to do it.
But the amount of work... So that goes into that one...
Years of practice.
Well, not even that, but just the scouting. The proper amount of water going over.
The right conditions.
And reading the rocks where everything is, making sure everybody's in... And even some of them climbing down...
And testing depth.
A gorge or something just to get your kayak to a launch spot.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you can get... it's too much work for one run over a waterfall. Yeah. Hey, you want? No, I'm good. You guys go ahead. Yeah. That sounds too much work to me.
I don't even want to watch.
Yeah, I'm not even going to come watch. That's just too much work to get there.
Yeah,
but if you're into that sort of thing and you're, like I say, you're doing all the training and all the, you know, you got your team that you know each other so well.
Yeah.
You know, that boom, 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 you got that trust and everything like that. Then, yeah, that'd be one thing, but yeah, not for me. That's not my cup of tea.
It's neat to watch the videos, though.
Oh, I love watching those videos. But you're not going to catch me doing that, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, if some of them were around here doing some of the stuff, I definitely... well, go and take a view.
Yeah, so a buddy of mine at work, he does whitewater kayaking, but one of the things he really enjoys is, and he's gotten some photos published a couple times where he would go and photograph whitewater competitions and so on.
Yeah.
And he gets some nice shots. He had a really expensive camera, a long lens, and so on. So he was getting some really good shots, and it's just that was his gig. That was his thing. He really enjoyed the photography side of whitewater.
Yeah. Well, kind of hard to do it while you're doing the whitewater. Now it's all video.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody's wearing one of those 360 cameras or a GoPro or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Hey, dog.
Pipe down over there, dog. The cold doesn't seem to bother her.
No?
No, the husky half shows up.
Well, she does have fur.
Is that what that is? What do you got to say?
Ow?
Ow? Not even. She's got a stain on her tongue, like a birthmark or something on her tongue.
Let's not get her activated. She's going to start making noise. Stick her cold, wet nose on my arm again.
You don't like dog snot in your arm.
No, I'm not used to it. I was used to it at one point when I had a bunch of beagles, but I don't have dogs anymore.
Now you're too clean.
Yeah, exactly.
There is something to be said for being in a craft on the water and things swimming around or under you.
Oh, absolutely.
And we joke about it, but if you were out paddling and you saw an alligator go right on by, as long as it's not coming at you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? There's a stipulation. Or a shark going, or killer whales going by.
When the orca swims under you and gives you the side eye, it's like, oh, is he sizing me up?
Is he sizing I could eat that. Your name's Derek? I'll call you hors d'oeuvre. Yeah. There's something about being in the water. We've been in the canoe.
And it's at the level. You're at water's level. You're not on the deck of a ship. You're not hanging off a bridge or on a hiking trail. You're in the water.
Yeah, yeah. We've been in a canoe. Bice Lake's pretty clear. And saw loon.
Oh, I've
go
seen
under
that.
Under the canoe
with the wings out and stuff.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah. But you get down in Florida, you get the manatees.
Oh yeah,
as well, right? There's something about that.
Cows of the sea.
So, did you know?
I did not.
Did you know that San Diego provides foraging habitat for the eastern Pacific green sea turtle?
I did not know that.
Small feeding population consists of about 60 individuals. And you can be on the lookout for these beautiful creatures while paddling from Chula Vista Wildlife Reserve. Naturalist guide can point out marine and bird life and teach you about local ecology and conservation efforts if you were the kayaking eco-tour. All equipment provided, kayak, life vest, binoculars, field guides. Best of all, your portion of your eco-tour ticket goes to nonprofit environmental education programs. There's a company called Ocean Connectors, and they do these eco-tours.
Yeah.
Join us for exciting and challenging kayaking adventure through Chula Vista's coastal habitats, ending in the restored Chula Vista wetlands. Guided tour takes you through dynamic waterways where you'll have the chance to spot local wildlife, including birds, fish, and other coastal sea creatures. While we welcome participants of all skill levels, please be aware that kayaking portion is fairly long, requires a bit of endurance. I think it's about 3 hours long. Wind can also pick up midway through the tour, making it more challenging but rewarding experience.
I'm looking at pictures here. I just Googled it. These look like the turtles from Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Huh.
But I don't think they talk like a surfer, though.
It's radical, dude.
What to expect? Wildlife viewing. Paddle through waters, keep an eye out for local wildlife, from native birds to coastal critters. You will learn about the population of green sea turtles that live in San Diego Bay, as well as threats and challenges facing native and migratory species, and what we can do to ensure our region's environmental health. Be sure to be on the lookout for the endangered green sea turtles that live in the bay. Educational insights. Our expert guides will provide fascinating information about local ecosystems and conservation efforts. The Chula Vista Wetlands. Paddle towards the restored wetlands, a vital area for wildlife and an important conservation success story. Come prepared for fun and challenging adventure while experience the beauty of the Chula Vista Wetlands. Sign up for your next wildlife kayaking eco tour today. Oceanconnectors.org. Look under the Eco Tours tab. They also have a stand-up paddleboarding tour, too. But this one here with the... That'd be cool, just be paddling along and all of a sudden a giant sea turtle sitting there and doodly-doo-doodly-doo. That'd just be cool.
It would be. It would be very cool.
I've been to San Diego and, oh, love it there. Absolutely love it there.
I wonder if you meet any of the turtles at No Nemo.
I don't know. Maybe.
Where's Nemo, guys?
Or maybe they'll have Nemo with them. Oh, just teasing. Oceanconnectors.org. Check them out if you're heading that way and go out for a few hours paddle and hopefully see some green sea turtles.
Very cool. That'd be very cool.
So we've been talking about off and on for a while now, waterways and keeping them clean and stuff like that. And I was looking up some stuff and did you know part three? In 2023, New York State sued PepsiCo in an effort to hold the soda and snack food giant partly responsible for litter that winds up in bodies of water supplying the city of Buffalo with drinking water.
I can see why somebody would think of doing this, because I know just driving through town and you pass by the area where, say, Tim Hortons is, and there's Tim Hortons litter everywhere. It's like, man, I wish they could do something with their own trash.
The lawsuit filed in state Supreme Court by Attorney General Letitia James accuses the company and its Frito-Lay subsidiaries of creating a public nuisance by making a huge number of plastic bottles and wrappers, some of which inevitably fall or blow into the Buffalo River when they are discarded. No company is too big to ensure that their products do not damage our environment and public health. All New Yorkers have a basic right to clean water, yet PepsiCo's irresponsible packaging and marketing endanger Buffalo's water supply, environment, and public health. PepsiCo said in a statement that it was serious about plastic reduction and effective recycling. It didn't directly comment on the lawsuit claim that it was legally responsible for keeping garbage out of the Buffalo River. PepsiCo, headquartered in New York, produces and packages at least 85 different beverage brands, including Gatorade and Pepsi products, at least 25 snack food brands that mostly come in plastic containers meant to be thrown away or recycled once they're empty. In past years, the company has repeatedly pledged that it would make meaningful strides to reduce its use of plastics. Lawsuit alleges that the opposite is happening, and PepsiCo misled the public about its efforts to combat plastic pollution. Litter from many sources ends up in the Buffalo River, but the Attorney General's office said a 2022 survey named PepsiCo as the single largest identifiable contributor to its plastic waste. Of the 1,916 pieces of plastic waste containing an edible brand,
an identifiable
brand, 17.1% were produced by PepsiCo, according to the survey. McDonald's came in a distant second.
So there's a lot of polluters out there.
Mm-hmm.
But Pepsi's product is the most popular to pollute with.
Right? Polluters' popularity. The Buffalo River, which empties into Lake Erie, was once considered one of the most polluted rivers in the United States, though restoration efforts begun in 1989 have been restoring its ecosystem. James wants PepsiCo to warn customers about the potential health and environmental risks of its packaging. Also wants the court to force the company to develop a plan to keep its packaging out of the Buffalo River. Lawsuits seeking financial penalties and restitution. Our Buffalo community fought for over 50 years to secure hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up toxic pollution, improve habitat, restore communities around the Buffalo River, said Jill Jadica, executive director of Buffalo Niagara Waterkeeper, in We will not sit idly by as our waterways become polluted again, this time from ever-growing single-use plastic pollution. That was in 2023. Fast forward a whole year.
Yes.
The results of that court case.
And I'm not surprised by the results.
Under current New York law, PepsiCo can't be held legally responsible for consumers improperly disposing of its packaging. The state Supreme Court has ruled.
And that's a valid, I think that's a valid ruling. You can't hold a producer of a product responsible for the ignorance of the public of how they dispose of their garbage.
November 2024, New York State Supreme Court sided with PepsiCo, dismissing the case, alleging that PepsiCo and subsidiary Frito-Lay were harming the public and the environment with its single-use plastic packaging. Among other points, Judge Emilio Colaiacovo wrote that imposing civil liability on a manufacturer for the acts of a third party seems contrary to every norm of established jurisprudence. The judge rejected the notion that manufacturers are responsible for the litter their products can potentially become. As defendants rightly note, there are recycling bins everywhere along Canalside and other water tributaries highlighted by the Attorney General, yet people continue to litter. Instead of pursuing those who commit the act, the Attorney General wishes to penalize those who produce the discarded item. This theory has never been adopted by a court in this state or any other. Judge also rejected the notion that PepsiCo failing to meet its own PCR goals constituted fraud or materially misleading statements to the public. Ultimately, the judge found the plastic reduction in PCR goals didn't have any bearing on the matter at hand. It's important to note that regardless of defendants' aspirational goals, Pepsi Frito-Lay did not pollute the Buffalo River or any other local waterway. Other people did, Colaiacovo wrote. Ruling bluntly displayed the limits of using the judicial system to reduce plastic pollution.
Where I can see it was a nice effort to say, hey, how do we help clean up the environment? But I think it was ended up being a waste of money because you can't. It's like, well, most people, when they do litter, it's because they're in a vehicle and they want to get rid of their garbage. Do we start holding GM, Ford, and so on? Do they hold them responsible? Because people in cars tend to pollute more.
Throw stuff out their window.
They throw their bottles and chip bags out their window. So people who drive, so car manufacturers need to be responsible too. You can't do that. You can't. The ignorance of the public can't be set back upon the manufacturer.
Right. PepsiCo's attorneys argue the company's products were safe and lawful. The company couldn't be held responsible for the independent decisions of third parties, such as consumers who choose to improperly and unlawfully dispose of their products. Company argued it didn't have a duty to warn because polluting the river was not the intended purpose of the products.
Exactly. Oh, we made these plastic bottles so that you could throw them in the river.
And says it right on the bag. When done, throw in your local river.
Yeah, exactly. Please recycle.
Yeah. Throw it where the wind's going to blow it into the lake.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pepsi. So, part three. Across the country, Los Angeles County filed suit against PepsiCo and the Coca-Cola Company in 2004.
So even after this case in 2023 was decided.
Was it a month before or a month after? I think maybe the month before they did this. In a legal brief, Los Angeles County Council Dawin Harris said the two brand owners and multiple beverage bottlers have littered the county of Los Angeles with their plastic bottles and engaged in a disinformation campaign to make consumers falsely believe that purchasing their products in a single-use plastic bottle is an environmentally responsible choice. Citing plastics pollution in the Los Angeles River and other local waterways, lawsuit accuses the defendants of public nuisance stemming from the plastic pollution in public areas. Also accuses them of deceptive practices and misleading advertising, claiming that companies are misrepresenting the hazards of single-use plastics and the ability to recycle to offset environmental risk. What? Among other points, the lawsuit argues the brand owners misled the public into believing that recycling is economically viable and that chemical recycling is effective. Lawsuit asks the court to require the companies to abate the public nuisance, stop using deceptive practices and misleading advertising, and pay restitution.
So is there a resolution here? Like,
it's not this one yet.
Yeah, it's still out there.
Yep.
So
yeah, this yeah.
Huh.
I was looking at, you know, cleaning rivers for paddling rivers and stuff like that, and I came across, I'm like, really?
Yeah, it's,
well, that's the case. Sorry, officer, don't give me a ticket for littering.
Yeah.
You just put PepsiCo on there, would you?
Is this a make-work project for lawyers?
I'm thinking.
Hey, the lawyers aren't making enough money lately. Let's get the government to sue a
business is
giant,
slow,
rich business.
So
yeah, yeah.
Let's take a little bit of time and see if we can't sue somebody.
There's millions going to be spent. Like, in the New York case, millions would have been spent, right?
Right.
In this case, more millions are going to be spent. It's people with deep pockets.
Time.
Government against a large corporation with deep pockets. It's just going to make lawyers money. It's not going to resolve anything. You need to educate the public.
Yeah. Use the bin that you're standing beside.
Yeah.
And the thing that bothered when you were talking to Tim Hortons, driving through in the morning, go to the drive-thru when I have going to grab coffee. Mm-hmm. And the people that they have garbage cans at the drive-thru.
Yeah.
So you can pull up to it, throw your garbage in, and then continue on to the order speaker.
I've seen people use those garbage cans.
Yeah. How many people do you see driving and try to do the basketball throw they're driving by?
And it gets in the
and
parking
it's
lot.
All over the parking lot. Like, you guys don't play for an NBA team. Pull up, stop, throw it in, and continue on.
I had a gentleman in front of me one time. He was he left the coffee place right before I did, and he was barely out of the parking lot, and I saw his empty coffee cup go flying out his passenger window, and I'm thinking, I bet he just dumped that into a into his own mug.
Yep.
His own thermal mug, and he just chucked this cup out. Yep. Out the window, onto the lawn of Tim Hortons, and it's like, are you kidding me? Like, you couldn't just take that all the way to work and throw it in the garbage at work?
Right.
It just baffles me that people are so ignorant.
They live among us.
It's so easy to do the easy thing.
Yeah.
This is like grumpy people on the roads and stuff, you know, road ragers and people that litter. It's like, you know, it's less effort to be less of what you are. Like, why do you go to such lengths to litter?
Just to go sort of off topic. Again! Driving to work. And you're coming up to an on-ramp.
Yep.
And you see a big semi-truck. Big 18-wheeler. You know he's going to want to merge.
Yep.
And there's six lanes of traffic next to you. Slow down. I let him in.
Yeah.
Because you know he's not sitting there.
Yeah.
And then he moves over to that next lane, and there's nobody in front of you.
Yeah.
In front of him.
Yeah.
And you just gun it.
Yeah.
All that, it took all of 30 seconds, and I just, now there's nobody
ahead
of me.
And he let somebody in.
Yeah. And the way I look at it, he's doing his job.
Yeah.
How would I like it if someone came to my work and kept interrupting me and wouldn't let me do my job?
Exactly.
That's the way I look at it, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So going from that goofiness of trying to sue.
Yeah.
Little Miami canoe business is closing.
Is it? Like 60 years?
Yeah. Canoeing business that's championed the conservation of the Little Miami River is closing its Warren County location after 60 years. Little Miami River is a Class 1 tributary of the Ohio River that flows 111 miles through five counties in southwestern Ohio. The Little Miami joins the Ohio River east of Cincinnati. Morgan's Canoe and Outdoor Adventures, started by Bob and June Morgan in the 1960s, announced the news in a Facebook post. The family owned and operated business in Washington Township described the closing as a huge win for conservation, sharing that the Morgan family's five properties and 25 acres of land along the Little Miami River have been acquired by the Little Miami Conservancy and Ohio Department of Natural Resources.
Oh, that's good.
So it's not being sold to some developer
condos
or anything like that. It's a perfect, beautiful ending to our lifelong stewardship of the river. The legacy of this river and its importance to people and wildlife will live on through so many conservation efforts. The Cincinnati-based Morgan family carries three generations of nature lovers conserving customers at the Warren County destination, as well as their location in Brookville, Indiana, along the Whitewater River. To our loyal customers and community, thank you for 60 amazing years. Together we've created memories that will last a lifetime. Help ensure the Little Miami River remains a treasure for future generations. So how cool is that? They protected that area of the river, conserved it, helped conserve it, and looking after it, as true stewards of that river, for 60 years.
Thinking of the things they've seen over that lifetime of running that business.
And even if they were 20, I mean, or not even 20, like if they're retirement age sort of deal or older people, right?
Yeah.
Like, even if they were 80 and they could take, you know, sell it to develop or make millions to pass on to their kids, grandkids, they're not. They're selling it to the
conservancy
and natural resources to keep it that way.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice. Nice legacy. Nice legacy.
I can't help but think of the different varying degrees of technology that they've seen for watercraft and over the years, how many different paddle styles and canoes and, you know, they probably back in the day, they were like very familiar with Grumman canoes and now they're into all these high tech canoes and kayaks and so on and rotomolded plastic canoes and different styles of this, that, different ways of doing things.
Yep.
And plus the constant fight, 60 years of preserving and protecting the Little Miami River. So it's amazing to just think about 60 years on that river doing and being what they are doing, right?
Can you imagine going to work to the same place for 60 years?
Incredible. They must have loved it.
They did. Apparently
they
did.
You do it for that long, you're going to love it.
So good on them. Very good on them. Nice legacy to have.
And their last name's Morgan. I wonder if they any relation to Dexter Morgan.
I think somebody who may have been a captain. A Captain Morgan.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, we just can't be serious, can we? The day we're too serious, the day I'm hanging up my headphones here. Hanging up my headphones, turning off my mic.
Yep.
Mucking around in boats off the warm water beaches of Queensland, Sunshine Coast. We're getting a lot of information and stories and things happening down in Australia, New Zealand. And,
well, it makes sense.
Because, you know, it's summer down there right now.
Summer there. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Mucking around the boats off the warm water beach, Queensland, Sunshine Coast may not sound like your average Australian Army resilience training exercise based on nudging near-death experiences. At least not until your kayak gets turned upside down and you're forced to rapidly learn the counterintuitive maneuver of rolling the boat back upright from underneath, or at the very least inelegantly extracting yourself amid rolling surf before you drown. Because you're not talking about going out for a nice
flat water paddle,
right? That's been the drill for the Army's 7th Brigade, which is signed up with instructors at Peak Sports Body Paddle Australia to put soldiers through their paces in difficult and challenging watercraft exercises, not because they are similar to ground warfare training, but rather the complete opposite. Sea kayaking is unique because it's so different from anything most participants have experienced. Training and participation manager for Paddle Australia, Mark Thurgood, says, whether it's capsizing in a kayak or navigating tricky landings, the challenges test resilience and adaptability. Program is being run out of the 7th Brigade Combat Behavior Center, the CBC. Isn't that Canadian Broadcasting Corp?
Something like that.
Which looks to instill the ability to maintain a cool head and clear thinking skills in soldiers when everything around them may be in chaos or upheaval. Big part of it is learning to work with colleagues and negotiate difficult situations and for team members to trust each other to maintain cohesion. I mean, when you're in battle, you got to be able to trust your mates there, right?
But are you going to be in battle in a kayak?
You never know.
It does test resiliency. It does, I think that's the purpose.
Well,
of
it's the whole chaos thing, keeping head cool head under pressure, right? Smooth teamwork, quiet confidence, and good morale don't just happen. Is built by junior leaders through a variety of challenging activities, such as sea kayaking and high roping, that is conducted by the Combat Behaviors Center. Those who make it through the Army's intensive three-week course also gain some official sports instructor stripes.
Nice.
Soldiers earn a Paddle Australia qualification that enables them to lead similar exercises in the future. Beyond the technical skills, it's about putting them in environments they're not used to and pushing their physical and mental limits, like when you're up a creek without a paddle. That's pretty cool. I mean, it's not something you think about, right?
Exactly. So it's a way to test the mettle, to test, you know, it gives, the more you experience in a combat situation, and in this situation, it kind of smooths out the edges of your brain for being in uncomfortable situations.
Which, chaos.
And that's what you're going to be in when you're in combat, when you're in the military. So I find that very interesting. It's a very neat technique to.
Well, if you're not a kayaker and you're going out and all of a sudden you hit these big waves and it just throws you.
Yeah.
And you don't know which way is up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right there. You're trying to figure out what to do. And like I say, you got to either roll it back up or get out.
Pretty wild to do a 3-week course.
Right?
That's amazing. Huh. But 3 weeks, and it's your job. So it's not like you're going to poo-poo and I'm going to take the afternoon off. No, buddy. You're going to keep going.
Yeah.
And we're going to do this.
No choice now,
pal. We're doing this 8 to 10 hours a day.
Right?
Doesn't matter what the weather's like.
Damn it. To keep with down there, I was reading an article in the National Indigenous Times. It's a news media organization for Indigenous affairs in Australia. Because, you know, as one does. 250-kilometer journey across the Arnhem land once took days in a dugout canoe, but is now a matter of hours in a motorized boat. Traditional owner and elder Samuel Gulwa remembers journeying in a dugout canoe surrounded by family and elders, but between the communities of Manangrida, where he lives, and Warui on Goldberg Island. It was during these trips he was introduced to important places across the coastline. When we were traveling with the canoe, we used to stop and camp. My mother, she used to tell us, "Come on, you boys, make a big fire, and I will tell you all these sacred site areas." Now there's no need for camping, as the days of paddling along the coast are gone, with motorized boats condensing the epic journey to a 4 to 5 hour trip. I think about going up Lake Opiongo by canoe.
Yep.
If you go up, it's like a 4 hour paddle.
Yeah.
Or it's like a 20-minute...
You take the water taxi, boom,
water taxi,
you're there.
Right? Charles Darwin University scholar and anthropologist Sam Williams has been working with Mr. Gulwa and a group of elders in Manangrida to understand how the transition from canoe to tinny has changed the journey. Looking particularly at the trip between Manangrida and Warui, Mr. Williams' research paper focuses the implications of accelerated movement for Indigenous people's connection to country.
It's wild to think about it from that perspective.
It
shrinks the planet. It shrinks your countryside. It shrinks what would normally be a multi-day trip and take a lot of effort to get there. And so you're doing it in stages and camping over several days and said, "Oh, it's going to be an hour and a half. We'll be there."
Yeah.
It shrinks things down, and I can see where this I'd actually be interested in reading the study about how it removes that natural connection to the land, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about the voyagers back in the day here in Ontario, where it's like a journey to bring furs back and forth across the Great Lakes area. It was like a months-long, arduous journey.
Well, and there's certain... Well, Pancake Bay.
Yeah.
So there's certain... stops in certain places that Pancake Bay north of Sault Ste. Marie was like they had enough supplies left to make pancakes. That's all that supplies they, and so they named it Pancake Bay.
Yeah.
So there was all these different spots. You knew, okay, when we hit here, we're stopping here. We hit here, there's this. When we hit here, there's this. But now it's just like hit the highway.
It's day's travel.
All that's gone. It's
just
got to
buy some gas. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Or yeah, either that or just jump in a power boat and rip across.
Yeah, you can be in 24 hours. You could be anywhere you want on the planet.
Yeah,
which is incredible to think of how our horizons are. Our planet has shrunk due to the speediness of transportation.
Our lives can move very quickly. And that's a phenomenon that everybody in the world is experiencing. I was really curious about what that means for the people I'm working with in terms of deep relationships they have to their ancestral country. These particularly important places on their land. While in some ways it's easier to access country with advancements in marine transport, reduced travel times can also mean people are not connecting with country in the same ways they once did. When you start looking at up north, when they used to like way in the Arctic and that, and they had all the kayaks and stuff for hunting and the dog sleds and all, and now everybody jumps on their skidoo and boogies
rips out to,
right?
So before
all that connection and all that
winter hunting areas, your summer hunting areas, and you think about like Lewis and Clark. How long did it take them to map out and discover a way across the continent? Mm-hmm. And so you think about the wagon trains. Oh, you don't get your wagon train out in spring and April. You're going to be locked up crossing the mountains in the winter, and you know, Donner Party type thing happens. And so it's amazing how. We are losing a connection to the land. And I think that's also, I think what I enjoy, what I find great about camping is, it's vacation. There's no real work to it. It's all pleasure and enjoyment, but you're out there on the land. You're out there paddling a route. You're saying, this is my 7-day route. I'm going to do a loop trip. And, you know, you're kind of getting back to the land. Mm-hmm. And I remember years ago trying to find, me and a bunch of guys at work, we were trying to find all these old native hunting routes and trails and portages, right? So it was neat to go and hunt these old routes down. And so it's this story kind of resonates with me because I've been experiencing this for a lot of my paddling life.
You gotta think as well, this goes back for them. Thousands of years.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like huge. That whole 1,000 years of history.
Yeah.
Is, you know, they're losing touch with that.
Yeah. And all these sacred sites that it would be a journey to get to a certain sacred site and you'd be stopping at sacred sites on the way. And now, because you can do it on a, as they say, a tinny, you can do it in an hour and a half, 2 hours instead of taking days to paddle it in a dugout, it does change the connection to the land.
It does. Because things are faster, it's almost harder to do than ever to have the kind of interactions the elders really care about, which are ones where you actually engage with the country as alive and sentient and as a source of deep ancestral power and meaning. Elders are determined to keep connection to country strong, and during their fieldwork in 2023 and 2024, filmed videos speaking about areas of particularly significance. Although not a perfect solution, the hope is the videos will help young people learn about these places when spending time on country is difficult. This is for the new generation, so they can learn more, Mr. Gulwa says. We made these videos for future generations so they can watch and learn about the country and know who their families are, to learn about country and clans. Research is part of a larger project commissioned by elders in Maningrida to renew and maintain connection to country. I've been saying that for ages. It's a shame how much of the indigenous culture, languages, and everything has been lost already.
Mm-hmm. Like the kids aren't learning the language of their forebears anymore. It's a lot of these languages are being lost to to time.
Well, I mean,
right?
Even look up in Temagami. Like the language is that close, pretty much gone.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
There's Alex Mathias. I think he's one of three. I think there's only three of them that still speak it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing some recording.
Which is good to carry on the history.
I hate to say
that.
It's too late, but better late than never.
Yes.
Sort of thing. So, no, that's a pretty cool project. That's, mm-hmm. yeah, I just come across these things about indigenous stuff every so often and find it fascinating. And like I say, it's just...
I find stories like this fascinating just for how it does resonate with me. And mm-hmm. like, I don't think I would have paid that much attention when I was in my 20s, but 30s and 40s, like it's stuff like this really starts to kind of stick to you. Well, it's like, oh, wow, yeah. This is being lost and that's being lost. Things are changing too much.
But when I lived up north, I had a bunch of indigenous friends. And then when I lived out west, I had different,
yeah.
you know, all from different, mm-hmm. you know, groups and stuff. And but there's always been that indigenous connection,
history,
I guess you could
background,
say,
yeah,
that I've had. And it just fascinates me sometimes. And then it's really, really sad to see what's been lost and whatnot that you can only see in museums and
exactly.
and history books, yeah. sort of thing. So, and even the history books, you can't always
trust.
Last thing we got this weekend, the 25th of January, we are at the Hamilton Adventure Expo.
Yes, we're going to that.
We got our tickets. We're going to go check things out, take a look around, see some people. So if you're there, if you haven't got a ticket yet, they're like 98% sold out or something like that.
We got to find some outdoor shows that are outside of our area. We keep talking about our shows that we're going to go to here and in the States. It's got to be some more. Like, I want to go to that German one.
Yeah. You buy tickets and we'll go. Canucopia I wanted to go to, but I think that's going to be a next year thing.
Yes.
Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show is February 21st to 23rd at the International Center. Outdooradventureshow.ca if you want more information. I will be speaking on Saturday at 3.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Quiet Adventure Symposium. We're going to have our booth and we're going to record people while we're there. March 1st in East Lansing, Michigan, the Michigan State University Pavilion. QuietAdventures.org for information about that. And that's always a good show because it's more than just paddling. It's all people-powered transportation. So walking, biking, hiking, paddling.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I've managed to sneak away from the table a couple times, but I've never really got to get absorbed into the show because we're there for a purpose, yeah. right? So I've only very rarely been able to sneak away. And where have you been? It's like, hey, I'm trying
to go to the
enjoy
bathroom.
The show
See
too.
You in 4 hours.
It was a really long bathroom,
right? Canucopia, March 7th to 9th, Madison, Wisconsin, the Alliant Energy Center, arutabaga.com for more information. That is always, there's so much to
Massive
see and do there.
Show.
I mean, you can get through the main booths in a day.
Yeah.
But it's all the extra info sessions.
Exactly.
The presentations, yep. and Darren and his crew put on such a good show. The Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, Nepean, Ontario, April 26th and 27th. This is the good one because there's free admission and free parking.
Free admission, free parking. You never hear about that.
Right? AdventureOttawa.ca. Check that one out as well. Yeah, it's going to be busy. This is the busy time of year, buddy.
Yep, we're getting
go,
there.
Go.
Tickets
go,
are
go,
bought. Go. Tickets are bought for Hamilton.
Tickets are bought. Tickets are right in that bag right there.
There we go.
Things are all pretty much set up for the Michigan show, QAS,
Excellent.
Quiet Adventure Symposium. So we just got to throw Kevin Callan in the truck.
There you go. Yeah.
We got to like gag him and put big handcuffs or something on when we're crossing the border. maybe when we're going with our passports. I got to get my new passport too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've been filling out all the information.
You haven't already gotten it?
I got to get my photo taken still.
Let's get close.
I know. Like, there's hardly anybody. Yeah. Henry's doesn't do the photos anymore.
No.
Anyway, maybe we're handing our passports and we'll just say,
yeah,
that guy needs a thorough exam. I don't trust. He's my passenger. I don't trust him.
You're like 5 weeks away.
Yeah. I'm good.
You're in the range of like rush passport.
No, I pick it up. I hand it in, and then I pick it up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right around the corner from where I work.
If they're busy.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry. If they're busy, I guess you guys are going alone.
Yeah. Mine's good till 2027, so I got a few years left before I have to get mine.
Yeah, ours. Well, we were looking. Tracy just happened to look and says, I'm thinking they're done this October? Nope, last October.
Damn it. Gosh darn it.
Ah, well.
And you can't fly with a passport that expires within 6 months.
Who's flying?
No, I'm just saying you can't fly on a passport.
Oh, they're going to expire in six months. Yeah, because then it's,
they're afraid you might get stuck in the country.
Oh, boy. Joy. you got anything else?
I do not.
Means we get to do our goodbye. You get to go sit in your
freezing car,
freezing cold car, shiver for the next half hour till you get home.
Yeah, I'm going to start my car now.
Yeah, you and your automatic car starter thingy. That's cheating.
Oh no, the button's broke.
Oh no. Your car died.
I assume it's starting right now.
You assume? You'll soon find out. Well, the dog's not moving. She's sleeping on my foot. So, maybe your car hasn't started.
Maybe.
All right. Anyway, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. All 466 of them. Mm-hmm. Getting close to 500.
Yep. That's when we quit.
That. $4.99. See you next week for our big 500.
Ghosted.
It just never happens. Episode 500. Suckers. Click. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.